So the opinion of the all the troops under his command was pretty high of him.
Pretty high. Mm-hmm. Thought real well of him.
Did we mentioned a little something earlier about some different battles, but when you first got over there, did you see action pretty soon?
Yeah. We our company had been on the Siegfried, what they call the Siegfried Line battle, where the wall was, and they had pulled back for one day's rest at the time I joined them, and then the next day after I joined them, we went right back into it.
Now, this was in France?
Uh-huh. When we had joined them, they had lost a lot of people, and then when they went back up, they had lost a lot more people. And I guess we had lost probably half of our company.
Mm-hmm.
Our company were made up of, like I said in the beginning, was armored infantry, which is a little different from regular infantry. We had a division of tanks and half tracks and this, that, and the other. And the armored infantry would spearhead on foot for the tanks, go out in front of the tanks and find the enemy. And then we would call for the tanks to come up behind us to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
And just the regular infantry a lot of times didn't have that.
Did you, if you can describe some of the towns or the people that you, did you liberate any towns or?
Well, yes.
See many of the local people there?
Quite a few of them. They were still a few people left in the town, not very many, because a lot of those little places were bombed and shelled, where a lot of the towns, there wasn't too much left of it.
Mm-hmm.
But in some of the towns they were, and some of the people were real friendly to us. They were glad to see us come in, and some of them wasn't. But the biggest majority of them that was left in the town was glad to see us come in.
They seemed to be glad to see you coming through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would help find something to eat. At that particular time, the groceries over there, the food wasn't all that great, you know, and being in battle like that, we had what we call a rolling kitchen, and the cooks would come up in a truck with a stove and everything mounted on it, and they'd cook out in the field when they could get to us.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times they couldn't get to us, and we just had to eat K rations or C rations or whatever we had, you know. And then if we did pull back in a little town for a couple of days rest or something like that, maybe we'd get relief a day or two and pull back. Most of the people in town, if they had what they call pumpernickel bread, it's a big old hard loaf of bread that you couldn't hardly eat. And that's mostly what they lived on, was stuff like that. But they were glad to see us, and a lot of them would divide, or maybe they'd have a little bakery in town where we'd go down and buy it and stuff like that until our kitchen could get up to us and feed us.
I see.
But we went through three major battles over there. I got three major battle stars. And
what were the names?
Well, one of them was the Siegfried Line, and the other one was the Forest that I was talking about in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was the Rhine River.
Uh-huh. In Germany.
In Germany. Uh-huh. We were one among the first. Well, we were the first in our area. Now, at the time we crossed the Rhine River, of course, there were other divisions up and down the river.
Right.
And miles apart. And we all crossed about the same time, but we were the first right in our particular area to go across the Rhine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the major battles. That was the third major battle that we was into. And then after the day that they declared that the war was over, they began to move us out of there down into Belgium, where the Germans had a big concentration camp. Of course, they had concentration camps all over there.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for the Jews and Polacks. And the one that we liberated down there that day, it covered no telling how many acres, and quite a few buildings.
This was one of the concentration camps that you helped liberate?
The buildings looked like a what we'd call a chicken house back here, just big, long buildings that they had their prisoners in, and most of the prisoners in the buildings we was at were Polacks, and there's some Jews in there. But they had them out there for field work. And most of them, of course, they just starved to death, nothing to them but skin and bone, and they would get them out in the fields before we got there. They'd have them out in the fields working, and if one was so weak or starved to death, so near starved to death that he wasn't able to work, they'd just shoot him right there in the field and go on. Just
the
let
German
him
guards would do that?
And so when we went in, I don't know, I don't remember how many people they were in those camps, but there's thousands of them, and they were dying so fast that we had to call for the engineers to come in and with bulldozers and dig big long graves, and we'd stack them in there, or they were stacked in there like cordwood, a head and a foot and a head and a foot, and they'd probably put 100, 150, 200 people in the same big long grave. And I don't know if this went on for several days.
These were people that were dying after you had already moved into the camps and were trying to help them?
They were starved to death. They were starved to death when we got in there. They were so weak and their stomachs were so growed together, so to speak. All they could eat or drink at the time was just a few swallows of soup at the time to kind of begin to get their strength back. They were... I've got some pictures in there that... I'll show you sometime.
Okay. All right. The archives and things like that that you got. So, when you, after peace had been declared, I guess, or after you was talking about you had crossed the Rhine River, had y'all heard that the Germans had surrendered? How did you hear that?
We were, of course, this was several days after crossing the Rhine. But
far were you from Berlin at that time, or did you know?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember the little town we were in at the time we heard it, but we was going towards it. And the night before that we heard it, they had surrendered. Me and a young man from Louisiana was in the same squad with me. And we usually pull guard. They put guards out in the, if we were back somewhere, they'd put guards out in the, surround the place where we were at each night to make sure that nobody slipped in on us. So he and I usually pull guard together. And the night before they surrendered the next day, he and I was out on a little hillside out a good ways from the house where the rest of the troops were staying. And we had a what we called a Screaming Charlie. It was an airplane, a search plane, that come over each night and make circles trying to find out where our troops were stationed at. So this particular night, the night before they surrendered, he and I were out on the side of a hill out the edge of town. I guess we were probably half a mile from rest of the troops, and it had been raining, and it was cold, and we had dug a little foxhole out there about half large enough for one to get in, and the thing had filled up with water. We were sitting there with a raincoat over our heads, you know, and talking and being quiet as we possibly could, and here come the airplane, old Charlie we called him. He came over, and evidently he had word that our troops were in that town, so he started strafing with the machine guns. And when we heard...
What does that mean?
That's the plane has machine guns on it. And when they get see something or think they see something, then they start just spraying the ground with machine gun fire.
But they were... The plane was looking for... You?
Yeah, looking for our troops.
And this was an American plane?
No, it was a German plane.
German plane, okay.
All right. And they'd come over at night looking for the American soldiers. And, of course, they were mounted with machine guns and bombs, too. And this particular night, we sitting out there with a little foxhole about half large enough for one to get in, and it was about half full of water. And when he came over, he started scraping, and we heard the bullet, so both of us hit the water in the little foxhole. And we like to drown, even though it's real shallow. And like to froze on top of that. But it's kind of comical. We're sitting out there, and we had not, back then, you did not hear a train or train whistle or see a train light or nothing, you know, at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's they'd try to slip the troops and the supply train through. But we were sitting out there, and about a couple of miles away, I guess, was a little town. And we heard that old freight train going back and forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time we'd heard one in months, so it was kind of amazing to us to hear one.
So it was kind of obvious that something was going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it was the next day.
The next day they declared that the war was over.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of the war, shortly, just a few days after that, they began to ship troops out, send them back home. The boys had been over there the longest. They began to get those prepared first to come back. And of course, we as newcomers hadn't been over there long, and we stayed after the war was over for some time.
Mm-hmm. After you mentioned going back south, I guess, toward Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And into some of these camps, how long in all were you in Europe, say, after the peace was declared? And what jobs were you doing at that time?
Well, I stayed over there because, like I say, all of us newcomers, we had to stay and do what they call military guard, you know, kind of set up guard post here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And not too long after it was over, they deactivated our division. And so I was in the detail of tipping, transport all equipment from where we was or where our motor pool was back to Paris, France, where they could process and ship it back to the States or mm-hmm. do whatever they needed to do with it. So I was on that detail duty for several months.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got all that finished, then they transferred what was left of us of the 4th Armored, which the 4th Armored had already deactivated. We were just a detail of it. But they, 11th Armored, they transferred us into the 4th Armored because the 4th Armored had shipped a lot of their oldest back too.
Mm-hmm.
So we made up the 4th Armored and stayed there until they shipped us back out.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there, I left there in June of 1945.
Mm-hmm. And you came back to the United States at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you still in military service for a period after that?
Well, not too long. As soon as I got back to the States, well, they gave me a choice of staying in 6 months or so, or either getting out then. In other circumstances, I'd taken to go ahead and get out at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was discharged in, I believe, August of that year, the best I remember.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice anything when you got back to this country as far as the economy, or the work, and city? Was it different?
Yeah, it had changed. Of course, before I left, so many men had gone into service and left so many jobs open, and a lot of women, which up until World War II, very few women worked in manufacturing plants.
Mm-hmm.
But during the process of the war, and men had to go to war, then a lot of the women had to go in and take the men's job in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I wasn't gone but a couple of years, I could see a great difference when I got back of more and more women getting into the manufacturing plants than had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the economy was much better because there were still many plants that had opened just for military purposes were still operating at that time.
Right. So it seemed like that was a time that things turned around
mm-hmm.
as far as the Depression,
mm-hmm.
about the time
mm-hmm.
the war effort was going on.
When the war effort was going on, it of course, it began to manufacture war materials, and along about that time, the economy began to get better, the minimum wage began to get raised up some, and people were just They were living a lot financially better at that time than they were 3-4 years before.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of marked the end of the Depression.
Mm-hmm. Or, mm-hmm.
The war had
turned the thing around for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Stewart, I think that pretty much covers a lot of what I wanted to cover here. I really, really appreciate your help and
glad to do
this
so.
Together.
Glad to do so.
And can you think of anything else you'd like to add or to this period of time or to this brief history that we've covered here?
Well, not really. I thought of something a while ago, but it's up my mind at the present time. But,
Mr. Stewart, again, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this interview with me. And we talked about several artifacts and some things that you brought back from Europe with you after the war. You want to explain a little bit about, you were telling me about the pistol and the rifle.